It's Monday, December 26th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight, we finish our ongoing series on how to build a new computer, talking about video cards, cases, power supplies, that sort of thing.
Let's do this!
So, we're back from the holidays.
It's not like we went anywhere.
Yeah, it was a fairly uneventful Christmas, Festivus, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, etc., etc.
Is it actually Kwanzaa yet? Or isn't Kwanzaa on like some different day or something?
I don't know when Kwanzaa is. All I know is they told us about it and we celebrated it in Catholic school, of all places.
Really?
Yeah.
The guy who invented the holiday came to RIT once. I didn't go see him, but the fact that there was a guy who invented the holiday that's still alive tells you a lot.
Yeah.
Not insulting Kwanzaa or anything.
Though, we had some nice Hanukkah food just today. We just got home. Christmas Eve, we had some excitement. You know, we were doing our typical lay around, play video games, and relax type holiday. And we're going to go out to eat. And Scott, in his infinite wisdom, while I'm putting on my shoes, is poking at our security system.
Now, it's not a security system that we use or have. It's just this house has an alarm and sensors and motion detectors and things and a control pad from the previous occupants.
Yeah, two nuns who were paranoid. We'll talk about them someday.
Right, but we don't pay for the contract, so they don't provide us a service or anything. It just sits there, not doing anything.
Like, we don't even know the code for the thing.
Yeah, it just sits there.
So Scott is poking at it, and he must have hit some combination of buttons because the fucker went off.
I can't believe it went off. We're not paying for it. How the hell is it supposed to work?
It was so loud, we screamed. It was painful. Like, oh God,
yeah.
Oh God.
Usually I'm the one who will always avoid using the telephone, but I opted for the job of calling the security company on the telephone rather than go near the alarm.
Yeah, so I go into the kitchen, and I see the box where this painful noise is coming from, and I cover one ear, and I got, like, my shoulder on the other ear, and I get on a chair, and I pull the thing off the wall and unscrew it, and I look inside, and it's blasting sound at me. There's all these wires and circuits, so I just grabbed the circuit and ripped it until all the wires came out, and it stopped making noise.
Ah, that was a great relief.
Yeah, until we heard that there was another noise.
Yeah, there's a siren on the side of the house.
Like an air raid siren. This thing was loud.
It was louder than the one in the house.
And I couldn't just go outside and cut the wires. I didn't want to go outside and hear that sound, let alone try to find a wire on the side of the house that wouldn't kill me. So I go and find the, like, metal control box to the alarm system. And I unscrew it and I pry it open. And there's all these wires and circuits in there. And I'm not thinking, so I grab a screwdriver and I go to just start unscrewing all the contacts. And I feel a little shock. And I pull back, and then I realize that there's 120 volts in there.
Dangerous.
Yeah, and we didn't have any implements, and the noise is loud, and we're running around, what do we do, what do we do? And Scott has failed to call the security company.
Yeah, they weren't there. I mean, it was Christmas freaking Eve, and obviously they're not a real security company like ADT, whatever, that has people on call 24/7. This is just some schmoes local. So there was no one there, and leaving a message wouldn't have really helped, because I needed someone that second.
So I took an oven mitt, and then I took some scissors, and I cut wires in this control box one by one until the noise stopped, and the control box went dead.
And it worked.
And then the police knocked on the door.
I guess it's still the security system was somehow active.
Yeah, well, what we learned is that, there's a phone line in the house. Every house has a phone line. We don't pay for it. We don't care. There's nothing plugged into it. We both have cell phones. But no matter what, even if you don't pay a dime to the phone company, by law, if you call an emergency number, like if you just plug a phone into a dead line and call 911, by law, the phone call will get through.
Yep.
So our security system, despite it being inactive or whatever, called 911 and the police came to see what was up.
Oh, at least they came. That's cool.
Yeah. Funnily, they came real quick.
Yeah, quicker than I ever expected.
So he comes in. Well, he's at the door, and I explain what happened, and I offer to let him look around. I'm like, here's where I cut all the wires on the alarm system. Here's the speaker I pulled out of the wall. And he's like, yeah, this happens. And then he left.
Yeah, he was pretty cool.
So if we had been robbers, we just got away with the crime of the century, because this cop came into a house, the alarm stopped going off while he was standing on the porch, he sees two guys, they've cut the wires.
One of them's
the
wearing a coat.
Yeah, we were both, like, dressed in coats because we were, like, ready
and
to
leave.
And
then as soon as he left, he was writing his report in his car, we drove away to go eat out.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're running away with loot or anything. It kind of pissed, though, because, I mean, we had, we don't have a telephone. And 911 and a cell phone isn't so great because you have to kind of like talk to people until you get the local guys. If I would have known that we had, you know, a 911 button in the house, Like, I would have liked to know that, and I would have liked to keep it. Now it's just dead, and we lost the 911 button.
Yep, I'm afraid
that
to
we never knew we had.
I'm really afraid to reconnect all the wires, because I'm afraid it might just start going off as soon as I reconnect it.
Yeah, I'm afraid it might shock us,
like,
too.
Just to get you the scope of this, I cut the power, and it kept going off because it had a battery backup inside of it.
Mm. At least it's really secure. I mean, it has a phone line that's pretty much always there. It has a battery, so if you cut the power, you still can't break into the house. You know? That's a pretty good security system, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, so these paranoid nuns, they got the best.
Yep.
And we're not like joking, we're just calling them nuns. Our house was actually occupied by two, like, super Catholic something nuns before we got here.
Yep, it's a renting house. You know, they don't own the house or anything. They were renters, and then they left, so now we're the renters.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good, because they didn't really mess up the house or anything.
Yeah, the house is beautiful, except for one mysterious stain that we kind of hide with furniture.
Eh, whatever. Probably just the nuns with their candles.
But other than that, that was our main Christmas story.
It sounds like Christmas to me.
Yeah, it was a shade better than my previous Christmas last year when I tried to fly back home to Detroit for the holidays, and I failed to do so. Through no fault of my own. You know, I got a flight home, and I went to Stewart Airport, and they call me the night. I'm going to go to the airport at night, and then they call me. They're like, your flight was canceled. Come in tomorrow. We've got a flight for you. Whatever. I show up the next day. They're like, yeah, your flight's late. You're going to miss your connection. Great. Tell you what, we'll put you on a cab for free and send you to Newark Airport, which is like an hour and a half away. And that's like a $100 cab ride. Whatever. They send me in a cab. It gets stuck in traffic. I miss that flight. They put me on two more flights. The one comes late, and I would have missed the standby. The next one comes, and then there's a blizzard, and it's grounded. And then they sent me in a cab all the way back to Stewart. I had to pay $12 in parking, and then I went home to my box, my little studio apartment, and went to sleep.
It can't be worse. I don't know which Christmas it was, but I was basically in Rochester, in Colony, all alone. Everyone else had gone, you know, to their homes for the holidays, and I didn't go anywhere. And I think I just went to, like, the Chinese restaurant alone and then sat at home playing games. Wasn't so bad, but...
Yeah.
It's worse than at least you had some excitement, even if it was terrible.
Yeah, it was actually cool because when an airport screws you, if an airline screws you, the airport's real sympathetic. So they put me in the lounge. They gave me free drinks pretty much all day. So I spent my Christmas sitting in Newark Airport's executive lounge drinking gin and tonic.
Mm.
It wasn't so bad.
You know, I never go in those lounges, but that's just JetBlue really doesn't have a lounge.
Yeah. Well, but I would never go into a lounge if I had to pay for it, because I looked, and those drinks are like $8 each.
Yeah, well, it's usually the lounge isn't like something you go in. It's like special travelers can go in there, usually.
Yeah, like...
It depends on which airline and what the lounge is and whatnot.
Yeah, they're mostly for business travelers and, like, pilots and all that crap.
Yep. But, yeah, I've never actually had a problem flying, ever. I've never had a delay. I've never had a cancellation. I've never had anything. I've arrived early in some occasions. I'm just real good at flying, and I always fly only when it's good to fly.
Well, that, and you also fly between, like, major, easy airports where nice airlines like JetBlue go.
Yeah,
try flying from anywhere in the East Coast to Michigan. No one frickin' flies there. There's all the direct... It's like $500 to fly from our airport to Detroit.
Yeah.
Luckily, my family is bit by bit moving out of Detroit. It's actually cheaper and faster to fly to Arizona to visit my mom than it is to fly to Detroit to visit my dad.
Well, to Arizona you go.
Yeah, in January I'm going
to
Arizona.
Rather go there than friggin' Michigan.
Hey, I like Michigan.
Arizona warm, Michigan cold, Arizona winds.
Michigan's real hot in the summer, it's just real cold in the winter.
Everywhere's real hot in the summer.
No, there's some places where it's not hot in the summer.
All right, Antarctica.
You know, Quebec isn't so hot.
The southern Quebec.
It's not that hot. It's not as hot as it could be. You know, Newfoundland, the territories up north in Canada.
Those aren't places people live.
People live out there.
Eskimos. Canadians. Not real people.
Yeah. So we don't really have any news. We figured you guys read news and you don't care.
It's the holidays, so there isn't too much big news going on. You know, the big news will start again probably in the new year when, you know... people have done releasing all the holiday stuff and whatnot, and then the new year will come around, and then people will get back to work, and then news will happen again.
Yep, I mean, news happened, it's just there wasn't anything we really... The only thing we really had planned to talk about anyway that we saw was the fact that Jack Thompson's in the news yet again.
Yep. Well, really?
Yeah, the whole Take Two stock incident.
Oh, that was like a week ago.
Yeah, we didn't talk about it.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk. Did we?
We were going to talk about it on the show that got canceled last week.
Oh, right.
We were going to talk about Jack Thompson. We were going to talk about something I can't read my writing and something else I can't read my writing.
Oh.
And speed limits.
Oh, good. We can have a whole show on speed limits.
Yeah.
We'll hold that off until later. But I made a news story, but I'll talk about it maybe tomorrow because it's video game day.
Yeah, it is definitely a video game news, so
yep.
Video game day.
Yep.
And coming up, what we were going to do, but we missed it just because we didn't do an episode, is we've recently watched 4, 5, and 6 of Star Wars again.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to say, the blood is boiling for Star Wars all over again, and we're going to have a lot to say. We're going to do a
whole
show on
Star
Wars.
There's nothing I like better than a whole bunch of spaceships in space shooting at each other with lasers.
Oh, yeah. All right. It's a trap.
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 That's no moon. It's a trap.
Trap. You know, if you watch those again and you actually, like, pay the freaking attention, there's so many just traps all over. It's just, really, the thing is just, trap. Trap.
Pretty much
trap,
all trap, of trap. Star Wars is over and over again. Oh, no, it's a trap. Someone is our only hope. Oh, there's another trap. Well, someone is our only hope.
I mean, let's go to that Cloud City. Oh, no, it's a trap.
You hear the words, you're our only hope, at least 7 times in the 3 movies. I counted.
We should count all 6 movies. How many times someone says hope? And how many times someone says trap, or a trap is set, or a trap is triggered? You know?
So the one benefit of the fact that we didn't do a show for one extra day is that we've got quality things of the day.
Because
every now and then,
deceptively quality things of the day.
Yeah, I mean, Scott's thing is kind of weird, and just go with it. Just trust us on this. And my thing is just, I just thought it was funny. So we'll do Scott's first.
All right, so there have been Flash games before. I mean, everyone plays the Flash games, right? But there's one kind of game where you don't really win or lose, or, you know, it's not like you don't have to pay money even. It's pretty much just like this sandbox, you know, where kind of like you can just do whatever you want here and there. And
yeah, like games are like, oh, there's a village. You can poke at it.
Yeah. And this one in particular is just really, really great for some reason I can't explain. It's in Java. Actually, it's not Flash, but it might as well be Flash. And basically you have sand, water, salt, and oil. And they're pixels, and they kind of fall down from the top of the screen. And there's also the name Kuji, which is a little baldy guy.
I usually get rid of him.
He's not so interesting. But basically, you can change the rate at which these things fall from the sky. You can speed or slow down time. And you can also draw other things. You can make walls, which are pretty much invincible. And you just draw walls, and you can change the size of your pen that you draw with from 1 pixel, 2 pixels, 4 pixels, 64 pixels.
So, like, you draw a little, like, cuppy wall, and then the sand falling down fills it up and then overflows.
Yep. And you can use a spout. If you use a spout, it's like drawing water, but it stays there, and water comes off of it. So it's kind of like a... just you draw something and water just comes out of it, like, whoa.
Or you can draw a plant, and a plant's like a wall, but it grows into water.
Yeah, so if you have a plant, it's just this green stuff, and if water touches it, it pretty much turns into plant. You can draw cera, C-E-R-A, which is kind of like this ceramic wall, right?
But it'll burn slowly.
Yeah, the wall isn't, walls are invincible, but ceramic, if you set it on fire with the fire... that I will soon explain.
Yeah, fire is great.
Fire is the most fun in this whole thing. It'll slowly, slowly burn, so you can do interesting things with it.
As opposed to oil, which burns quickly.
Yeah, oil, if fire gets near oil, it just goes crazy with fire. Fire, obviously, is fire. You just draw fire, and then if it catches onto things that are flammable, it'll ignite.
Now, this game is basically just a physics engine. A very simple one, sitting there, and you can poke at it.
Yep, it's basically pixel-based. I think it actually, you know, goes across all the pixels and figures out, okay, this pixel touched that, now this, you know.
It's just, I don't know why, it's just so utterly amusing. I sat there for like an hour just playing with
it. I made a system where I set the oil, there's an oil falling from the top of the screen, and there's fire at the top of the oil, right? And there's some spouts of water under it. Right? And there's a wall enclosing the whole system. So you have is you have oil that falls down, but some of the oil sets on fire and some of it keeps going down. Then you have water just filling up slowly, and then I start some plant. So you have this thing just filling up with plant because the water turns into plant. And eventually the plant gets all the way to the top where the fire is at the top of the oil. So all the plant just sets on fire and turns to nothing, and it fills up with water again. But the fire doesn't get all the plant. So the plant grows back and sets on fire again. It's just perpetual motion.
I made something.
That's just one of the great things you can do with it.
Yep, I made a bunch of walls, and I basically made an oil lamp where there's fire burning at the end of this lamp, at, like at the top, and then there's a little loopy, like a reservoir where oil collects, and then the like oil is constantly refilling the lamp so it never runs out.
It's pretty fun. You can just do crazy stuff. I mean, the salt really doesn't do anything. But
it's still fun to watch it flow around.
Yeah, the sand can put out fires, and the water can put out fires. It's like, I would make like a ceramic thing and have fire come up under it, and then when the fire burnt through the ceramic, the sand and the water would fall out and put the fire out. But then that water would touch some plant that would grow and hit some oil that was on fire. Oh my God, I would do it again. And the one other thing in this game, there's an eraser. You can just erase things. And there's the question mark. If you use the question mark, it just makes the game go crazy with like this fractal all over the place. I don't know the point of it. It's kind of silly.
Yeah. So just seriously, go to this site, try it. It'll look weird. Trust us. If you're not amused within 30 seconds, then you'll get your money back.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even a game. Just start playing with it and see what happens. You know what would be way cool? Is that they made this for the DS with the stylus, man. That would rock.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That'd be real good if I was just bored, like on a train for 5 minutes.
Yep.
So my thing, this is just someone's blog. And I just thought it was cool because it's basically this Russian guy, as far as I can tell, writing about how Russians actually drink vodka and how to drink vodka without getting drunk.
Because, yeah, Russians actually do drink a shit ton of vodka. That's not like some stereotype.
Yeah, because, I mean, a long time ago, the tradition was that a lot of times the water supply wasn't that safe and vodka was safe. So you drank vodka to get your water, but you didn't want to get drunk because you had to do work. So Russians came up with a lot of ways to not get drunk but still drink a lot of vodka.
Now, does this work with non-vodka or is it vodka specific?
I don't know. I mean, part of it is that there are genetic predispositions and that people who drink a lot tend to have high resistances to drunkenness.
Well, that's the same thing with anything. I mean, if you eat a lot of Percocet, eventually it doesn't work and you have to take more and more.
I mean, some of this stuff is kind of meh, and some of it's silly and some of it's pretty officious. But basically, it's a really cool, here's how to not get drunk, and it also talks a lot about the traditions around vodka, and like if you go to a Russian party and the Russians are drinking vodka, it not only tells you how much vodka you're expected to drink socially, but how to politely not drink too much vodka and get drunk and sick.
That's good. No one ever wants to get sick. I'm, at least I don't want to get sick.
I don't know many people who drink specifically to get sick. I know people who drink to get drunk, which I'm not a big fan of.
Yeah, it would be pretty interesting to see which of the things the Russians do, which ones are scientifically actually helping you not get drunk and which ones aren't. And if there was a way to learn from that, to like just make like a thing you drink and then you could, you know, you could like drink one of these things we invent and then drink a drink of vodka and then drink one of these things we invent and you won't get drunk.
A lot of it's just common sense. They say like drink shots, but always eat things between every shot. And that's why, like, a traditional Russian drinking party, they'll have these, I can't pronounce the word, it's a Russian word that kind of means appetizer. There's little salty things or caviar things, and between every shot, you're supposed to eat a whole bunch of appetizers.
Mm.
And you're supposed to eat while you're drinking, and...
Now, what if you get full, though?
I don't know. I don't think you ever do.
Mm.
It's a Russian party. What do you want?
I don't know. Oh, those Russians.
In Soviet Russia, Yakov Smirnov makes you.
Yeah. Oh, we're supposed to, like, you know, say something about inside jokes. Does that count as an inside joke?
I've been trying
to think about it.
In Soviet Russia, something something's you is not an inside joke. That is a fart cliche that grew out of a terrible Soviet comedian from, like, the 80s.
There's a guy called Yakov Smirnov, and he is a comedian, and he has his own, like, place that he does comedy at. He doesn't do comedy at other places, and you can go to the place. There's a website. Just search for it. It's not hard to find.
His jokes are all of the same format. In America, something something's you, or something you something something. in Soviet Russia, something, something you.
Yep.
Like in America, you eat meef or beef, but in Soviet Russia, beef eats you.
Yep. Only they're actually somewhat funny because they relate to Soviet Russia and they're things that in Soviet Russia actually happened to you.
Yeah, basically, he is the Jeff Foxworthy of Soviet Russia.
I don't know who Jeff Foxworthy is, but I'll let
Jeff
that go.
Jeff Foxworthy was the, you might be a redneck if blah, 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 blah.
Oh, I know that guy.
Yeah.
The previous joke where I said, oh, those Russians. There's a song called Ra-Ra Rasputin. You know, Rasputin, the Russian guy who, you know, did the Queen and
well,
such.
Well, allegedly.
Yeah, but anyway, there's a song, and at the end of the song, the guy goes, oh, those Russians. And we'll talk more about that in the future.
Yeah, because it's part, we've been searching for a Russian song that we can't find for a long time.
Yeah, we'll let that one stay a mystery for a little while longer.
Yeah, yeah.
In the meantime.
But you know what? That Rasputin, he was Russia's greatest love machine.
All right, for the past two Mondays, we've done our how to build a computer and how to properly purchase a computer, and now we're going to continue.
This is part three of three.
Of three? Well, probably of three.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to need to do another one on this, because every other topic beyond building a computer is really another series, like networking and yeah. building servers and all that
yeah.
stuff.
This bit is really all the parts and which ones to buy and what they do. Maybe we could do one on like actual construction instructions, but you can get that on the internet. It's not
yeah,
hard.
I mean, seriously, you plug the things that fit into the holes, and you can't plug things in wrong because it won't let you.
Yeah, the hardest part is the BIOS, and then you just take the book that comes with the motherboard, and you read each item, and you say, it tells you, you should set this to this if you have this, you should set this to this if you have this. And you
well,
just
of course, the rule
directions.
With the BIOS is, when in doubt, don't touch it.
Yeah.
If you don't know what something does, leave it alone, it'll work fine.
Yep. The only thing you really have to change is make it work faster.
But that's a topic for another day. That's really not a big part of this. That's like post-building the computer.
Of course. Today, the first thing we got to talk about is what video card do you get?
And there are basically four broad, arbitrary categories of video cards. Mm-hmm. From bottom to top, they are no-name video cards, middle-of-the-road, basically no-name crap video cards, normal video cards, gaming video cards, and professional video cards.
Mm.
And those are very broad, obtuse, don't worry about them categories. That's just how I like to think about it.
Yep.
Don't buy a no-name video card.
Well, all right. A no-name video card is something like it only can do 2D graphics, or it doesn't even have a 3D chip, or it has a 3D chip in it you've never heard of, like one of those like it's not NVIDIA, it's not ATI, it has something else on it.
Yeah, like, and it's a video card that came with, like, a Dell Dimension, and it has a weird name, and it's not an NVIDIA, and it's not ATI, it's just something weird.
All those video cards are really good for are computers that don't really need a display. Like, a server doesn't really need to show anything on the screen. Maybe it'll show some text on the screen, you know, or you just use the terminal. And at the most, it might have a 2D GUI, but it doesn't have any fancy graphics or anything like that. Then you can use one of those. You don't care. You just need a video card to boot the computer. But if you actually want to have a desktop computer, you need something better.
Yeah. And honestly, there's a big war going on between ATI and NVIDIA when it comes to the two middle categories of video cards, which is all you're really looking for here.
Yep.
And to not be partisan, buy an NVIDIA. Don't buy an ATI.
Well, see, the thing is hardware-wise, looking only at the chips themselves, it's kind of a tough call. Because the ATI chip is pretty powerful and pretty cheap. And the NVIDIA, with its wide array of chips, are pretty powerful and pretty cheap. And you can compare them on any given day, and one guy will have a better top of the line, and one guy will have a better middle of the line. And, you know, just considering how many pixels it can push without in optimum conditions, and how good the graphics it can do, you really have to look at a whole bunch of different, you know, stats and charts to figure out which one is the best.
And they're
pretty
much equal.
Yeah, don't even think about it because it doesn't matter. The reason you should get NVIDIA is because it works in Linux, and ATI doesn't work in Linux for crap.
Not only that, ATI has trouble in Windows sometimes.
Yeah, the ATI drivers are really, 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 really had more reallys, shitty as fuck.
That we can't stress enough how poorly written and poorly executed the ATI drivers are.
I mean, that's like NVIDIA is kind of a good company. Like they're putting stuff out for Linux that is really good, but they won't open source the driver, which makes a lot of the crazy open source zealots mad at them.
But at the same time, they make it easy to incorporate their driver into a Linux distribution.
Yep, and the thing is they. The only reason they don't open source the driver, at least some people at NVIDIA have said the only reason they don't open source the driver, is that ATI doesn't see it. Because if ATI sees it, then ATI and NVIDIA would be pretty much equal. As long as ATI doesn't see what makes the NVIDIA driver so fucking awesome, I use the word fucking a lot here. I don't know why.
But I guess we can't stress it enough.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, NVIDIA has a unified driver. They have one driver for every card.
Mm-hmm.
There are rare exceptions to that, and you won't run into them.
Yep, because they don't make those cards anymore.
Yeah, like I ran into it. My computer I'm recording this show on now has a GeForce 2 GTS, which is this. It was the $400 top of the line awesome video card in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a piece of crap, and NVIDIA's dropped support for it. So I had to use an old version of the driver because they just dropped it from the new driver.
Mm.
I guarantee this won't happen to you anytime soon, if at all.
The other thing you have to realize is that NVIDIA is just a chip maker, and they make drivers to support their chips. ATI makes chips and cards and drivers, and the only way you can get an ATI chip is if you buy a card that is made by ATI. You won't find, like, Abit or Asus or, who else, Gainword or Lite-On or any of those companies making a video card with an ATI chip on it, because only ATI makes cards with ATI chips on it.
But my GeForce, 3D Labs made that, and before that, some other company made my NVIDIA card.
Yeah, anyone who wants to make a video card with an NVIDIA chip on it can do so. So that just helps you out, because now you have all these different people competing on price, and NVIDIA just doesn't care. They make plenty of money because they're selling chips to all these people. It's just you can get people to fight over which is going to be the cheapest GeForce FX 9000, which one, you know, is it going to be this company? Who's going to make a better card? Do I want to get a card that has more RAM, less RAM? You know, you have so much more choice, more competition, better for the consumer, and it's just great.
Yeah, and even though there's all these different kinds, once again, you don't need to worry about the driver, because some companies put out their own driver for, like, say, 3D Labs, when I got my video card.
Mm-hmm.
They put out their own driver for my GeForce card.
Yep.
However, the GeForce NVIDIA driver, the one that NVIDIA puts out, worked just fine. In fact, was better.
Well, actually, the thing is I had a Diamond Viper V770, which is the first TNT2 card that didn't suck. Well, it was really the first TNT2 card that was worth buying at all.
Yep.
And it came with a Diamond driver. But I realized later that all those drivers that have the same brand as the card manufacturer are really just the NVIDIA driver in disguise. And it's the NVIDIA driver from whatever time they released your card. And if you use the NVIDIA driver from the NVIDIA website, not only does it work better, because it is definitely absent of any buggy code that the video card manufacturer might have put in, but it's more updated. Because the one from the video card manufacturer is never going to really update. The NVIDIA one is updated. And while they have no guarantee and there's all this fine print, it's great, and you can use it no matter who made your card, and it'll work perfectly.
Yep.
And
they're often putting out improvements. Whenever they release a new NVIDIA driver, they always add stuff like, this card is now faster, or the driver is now smaller, or something cool.
Mm-hmm. And while you may be thinking, what do they know? My ATI driver works fine. I'm never going to use Linux. What do I care? Windows Vista is right now, you got to look at the situation at this point in time. XP is the current Windows. Vista is coming out. Vista is going to have DRM and other stuff that won't let you pirate it. It'll be really hard to pirate. Probably not impossible. I don't think that'll ever happen.
Yeah, but even if you pirate it, it's going to be hard to get updates. You're going to have trouble.
Yeah. You're going to have trouble downloading and listening to your own MP3 collection.
Like, if you thought XP was hard to pirate, oh my God.
Vista is not going to be this great thing. It's probably going to be like the first Windows that isn't a monopoly. So you're probably not going to want to upgrade to that. And eventually, one day, they'll stop supporting XP, and it'll just be impossible to use it without getting a million viruses.
I mean, Windows 2000 is already barely supported.
Yeah, and we're talking years down the road, because computers last 5-6 years, at least mine do, you know? You're going to probably go to Linux or Mac or something. And if you're planning on going to Linux, unless ATI all of a sudden comes out with a working good Linux driver sometime between now and then, you can't go wrong buying an NVIDIA. You can always jump to Linux in case something happens. If you want to throw a Linux Live CD in to fix your computer, it'll work a lot better.
Yeah, if you want a dual boot, you have to use NVIDIA.
Yep, and people were talking about things like game CDs that would just boot off the CD and play. And if those are based on Linux, you're going to need an NVIDIA or, you know, it. Just buy an NVIDIA card.
We're not kidding. ATI's drivers just... half of them just won't even work in Linux. They're buggy. They're huge. Upgrading them can just prevent your computer from booting.
Yep. I mean, I have an ATI in my laptop from work, and I don't do 3D with it at all. I mean, sometimes you play Quake 3 at work, and it works fine, sure. But the actual interface of doing things in the driver, like setting up multiple monitors, it's just painful, and it doesn't work right.
I mean, we had a computer downstairs. We call it Div, affectionately, and it's connected to our TV. And we had this ATI pretty good video card with Nest Video out on it, and mm-hmm. we just stuck it in the box, built Linux on it. And then we discovered that in Linux, there is actually no way in the world to make that computer output video on the S-Video.
Wait, so then I plugged my laptop from ATI into the TV, and it kind of worked kind of shittily. I really couldn't make it go, and this was with the ATI video card. So then we bought a $30 GeForce 4 crap video card.
Popped it in, it worked immediately. We didn't have to do anything.
It worked properly. And it wasn't because of who made the video card, it was because it was an NVIDIA video card.
Now, you hear a lot of things like Steam and all these Valve games, they say they're backing ATI, and you always see things like, oh, ATI, it'll work right here on ATI.
Yep.
Don't worry about that. The cards are the same. You're not going to notice a significant difference.
Yeah, you'll see sites that, you know, the sites with all the benchmarks for all the gamers. They compare, how fast it is. And sure, if you have a game that was written for DirectX and for ATI, if you have an ATI and it's working well, you're going to get a few more FPS with the ATI card than with the equivalent NVIDIA card. It's going to be that way.
But a lot of times they imply that it's not going to really work if you don't have an ATI card, and that's just not true.
That's just BS. It works just fine with the NVIDIA. You'll just have a few FPS less, and if you really care about those FPS extra, you got a problem. I mean, is it really worth the extra trouble and the self-limiting just to get, a few extra frames in a game that you don't even notice because they're above your vertical sync? And
because a long time ago it mattered. I mean, back in the day when 20 frames per second was good, you could overclock your video card and get 25, and it was a huge improvement.
Huge improvement.
But if you're getting 100 and now you get 108,
that doesn't mean anything. Even if you're getting 100, if all of a sudden you get 200, that doesn't mean anything. You don't see that.
Yeah, in fact, usually you can't. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many of you realize, but in most games there is something called vertical sync.
You want to turn vertical sync on if you can.
Yeah, though you usually, in old games, like in the Quake 2 days, most people turned it off because you couldn't handle it.
Yep.
Basically, all it does is your monitor refreshes a certain number of times per second.
At a certain times.
Yes. Vertical sync ensures that the video card updates in tune with your monitor.
Right.
It's more complicated than that, but that's basically what it is.
So basically, my monitor will update the picture on itself 75 times every second, right? Now, normally, my video card will just churn out a billion frames, and when the monitor updates, it'll just display whatever frame happens to be there at the time. And the other frames, they kind of get displayed. It's complicated. But if you set vertical sync, the video card will display one frame for every time the monitor updates, and it'll be perfect and in sync, and there's no flickering, and it's... And that's
now, the other
want.
Half of this that's just the part that makes the performance difference is that vertical sync, when you don't have it, the game itself will not sync itself up vertically, because it's just updating as fast as it can. So if you, say it's Quake, and you look up really quick, the textures might tear. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to... You have to see a picture of it. Maybe I'll find a Google link. But basically, the... horizontally, because it's called vertical sync, but it affects how things look horizontally.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see things kind of like jaggy, like they won't be lined up for a second while you're looking around.
Yep.
But the thing is, regardless of that, you can't see FPS greater than your monitor can display.
Mm-hmm.
Your monitor is probably not refreshing more than maybe 120 times a second at most if you have a really, really good monitor.
Yep. So what it comes down to is if your monitor is a 75 frame a second monitor, if you're putting out more than 75 frames a second on your video card, those frames are basically useless, and your video card is better than you need it to be, and you could probably just turn up the graphic image quality to lower the frames a bit, and you would have a better experience.
Now, to wrap up, just because we've been talking about video cards a lot, we've thrown a lot of information at you.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, if you're a multimedia designer or 3D designer or something for your job, buy a professional video card if you can, like an Oxygen or whatever.
A Matrox.
Yeah, Matrox is good. If you do 2D, Matrox is king.
I don't know if they're still king. I haven't looked at them in a while.
They were king the last time I checked, but that was over a year ago.
That was many years ago.
Yeah.
But if you're doing like, if you're working at like a 3D animation place, you're going to need some, one of these crazy like Quadro something something cards that are just insane. I mean, you could use them for gaming, but they're not made for that.
They really won't help you out.
Yeah, they're made to just render videos really, really quick and make model, you know, all that kind of stuff.
But for normal use, a general rule of thumb, even if you're a gamer, even if you're a fairly hardcore gamer, if you're the hardest core gamer, you're just going to spend $800 and buy the newest video card, whatever. Mm-hmm. If you're smart, buy the second best video card on the market.
Yep.
Like, literally, look at what the most expensive, awesome, normal video card is. Go back one or maybe two steps, and you'll save $400 or $500, and it'll be almost as good.
Mm-hmm. I've always, it's kind of like video cards seem to follow the same price scale as CPUs. Like, the number one GeForce will be crazy out of control. The one under it will be like half that price. The one under it will be half that price. And then it starts to taper off. Like the next one will only be $20 cheaper. The next one will only be $5 cheaper. The next one's only $1 cheaper. So that's the point at which, okay, it's worth it to spend $25 and go up three steps. The one last thing, though, is nowadays you can get, I don't know how common it is, but a while ago you could get NVIDIA Enforce motherboards that had video cards in them. That's what I have for my parents, and it's a great way to save a crap ton of money.
Yes, and remember, you can always add a video card later if you need a fast one.
Yeah, and basically you have a video card in the motherboard that is a GeForce 4, and it works just fine for normal computing. You have to you have to get more RAM because you're going to use your RAM as the video card RAM in this kind of configuration, but you can save a lot of money if you don't actually want to do 3D games really much at all. You know, if you maybe you're going to do a tiny 3D game like The Sims or something, you know, then it'll work just fine.
And for this point in time, again, once again, you might notice we tried to avoid saying specific video cards because that a month from now would be completely different.
Yep.
But if you don't play the new games like Half-Life 2, basically, that's really the only game.
Mm-hmm.
A crap $30 GeForce 4 MX, whatever, will be more than you need to play Counter-Strike.
Yeah, that'll play the crap out of Counter-Strike 1. If you want to play Counter-Strike Source, you might need a GeForce FX, maybe at least 6600 seems right at this point in time.
Yeah.
6600 is just the normal great card that you can play Half-Life 2 just fine.
Just buy the second or third best card and you'll be fine.
Yep.
Don't buy the number one card. You really, really don't need it. You're not going to get that much out of it. A month from now, you'll see that card for $200 less.
Oh, there's also something now that's become popular again called SLI, where you combine two video cards together to sort of double whatever.
It's silly.
Don't do it. I mean, the logic is that you can buy a card now, and then later when, you know, the new card, to get a new card would be so expensive, instead you can just buy another one just like your old card and tie them together. It doesn't really work.
Yeah, two video cards are not twice as fast as one video card.
In reality, this system, if you do just normal 3D stuff, is actually slower because the overhead of the two cards communicating with each other makes it slower than just having one card. But if you are doing crazy 3D stuff, like an ultra super awesome brand new game, it will help you out, but it doesn't help you out at all when you compare it to how much more it costs to buy two video cards. So just forget about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's even if you're a programmer, just don't even consider it. Don't just pretend it doesn't exist. Anyone who does it, we're just going to make fun of you.
Buy it if you play, only if you play PC games all day, every day, all night. And yeah, the newest PC games. Maybe if you do play PC games for a living, buy this.
Yeah.
Otherwise, forget about it. All right, the end of video cards.
Yep. Now, since we talked about video cards so much, we'll do a quick bit on displays. You know, monitor, flat screen, CRT, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people neglect it, And we don't consider it when we consider the price of a computer, because generally, you buy a new computer, you don't need a new monitor. Monitors don't go bad.
As long as you have a monitor. You might not have one. You might not have any computer.
Or you might have an old crap monitor. You got to buy a new one.
Yeah. And the monitor goes on a separate upgrade scale from the computer.
Yes. I mean, I've upgraded my computer once in the last 5 years. I upgraded the motherboard, whatever. I've had the same monitor since the year 2000, and it's kicking strong, and I'll probably use it another 5 years.
Yep, I had the same 17-inch CRT longer than the first computer that I bought with it, but I used it for like one or two more years into the newer computer. Then I got an LCD screen, but I didn't get rid of the CRT. I just had two monitors. And then eventually, when I got a job and real money, I replaced the CRT, and now I have two LCDs. But
yeah, they're real nice LCDs.
They're real nice.
But we're not going to go into depth on all the different statistics and numbers that are associated with all the different kinds of displays, because that would be a show in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do a show on that one day. But we just want to do a quick overview of, like, basically your choices are a CRT or a cathode ray tube, you know.
That's a normal monitor.
A monitor with a big glass and it's huge and heavy,
mm-hmm.
or an LCD, liquid mm-hmm. crystal display, the little flat screens.
Yep, just like laptops, but not, because they sit on your desk.
Now, basically, unless you have a reason to, or if you're really trying to save money, you can get a 17 or a 19-inch CRT
for like $100.
Real cheap. And we're talking a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And the only real downsides of them are that they're big and they're heavy.
If you had a lot of desk space and you don't really care and, you know, you want to save a lot of money, get like a 19-inch CRT. 17 inches is a little small these days. Get a 19-inch CRT, run it at 1280 by 1024, and you're good to go.
Yeah, and if you want to get an LCD, basically you have to consider right now, are you a gamer or not?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to play games, you have to get a low-latency LCD.
Yeah, you want you'll see a number called the refresh rate, and it'll be measured in milliseconds. If you're gaming, you need at least 12 milliseconds or less.
Otherwise, you'll get ghosting.
Yeah, ghosting basically means that when you're playing the game, things will like kind of not disappear immediately, and you'll see like kind of like this shadow when things move, kind of like a motion blur that's not
like
supposed to be
there.
Like
you have an old Game Boy, like the original Game Boy, or an old Game Gear.
Mm-hmm.
That's ghosting.
Yeah, because those were very, very low refresh rate LCD screens where, you know, a pixel would move, let's say in Tetris, the block would move down, but you'd still kind of see the old block because it didn't disappear yet. There's a ghost of the old block where it used to be. So that's why it's called ghosting.
And the only other main factor is there's active matrix and passive matrix.
Mm-hmm.
You want active matrix.
No one really pays attention to that anymore because all the monitors are the good kind.
Yeah, but watch out. If you see a monitor that looks too good to be true and it's huge and it has a low latency and it's cheap, check and see if it's a passive matrix. It'll say somewhere. You don't want that. Mm-hmm. Passive matrix is what is on old crappy laptops.
Yep. Now, if you don't really care what your screen looks like, you can get lots. Like, I got my grandma this no-name brand, like, Southeast Asian random crap LCD screen. And you know what? It didn't have any dead pixels, and it works, and it had speakers built in, which is good for my grandma, and it was just great. But if you actually care, get a name brand. It'll be a brand you've heard of, like ViewSonic, Sony, Samsung, LG, Philips, I think. You know, don't get, like, Rosewill or CTX or Random Guy. Because odds are you're not going to have a nice warranty and there might be dead pixels and all kinds of bad things.
Just don't skimp on the monitor because that's the primary way you enjoy your computer.
Mm-hmm.
And a bad monitor, I mean, if you sit down at a computer that has a crappy worn-out monitor and it doesn't look right, the computer feels slower. It's not actually slower, but it feels crappier to use.
Mm-hmm. And
plus, it hurts your eyes.
And don't underestimate the importance of the monitor. I had a computer, and I was using that 17-inch CRT. And sure, I'd used that 17-inch CRT with my old crap video card. And I upgraded to a whole new computer. And, you know, it didn't really make that much of a difference graphically. You know, even though I had upgraded from a TNT2 to an FX5900, which is just huge. That's like three or four generations of video card upgraded. And sure, I had more FPS, but it wasn't that much better. As soon as I bought that new LCD, that made more difference than all the video card in the world could have. So don't underestimate how important the monitor is.
All right. We're running long, as we tend to on this topic.
Great.
But burners, peripheral drives, floppy drives, we can do this real quick because it's real simple.
Yep.
Back in the day, you used to have to buy a Plextor because mm-hmm. Plextor made the best burners in the world.
And other burners would fail to burn CDs. You had to throw them out, coasters. It was bad.
Nowadays, it doesn't matter. Buy a cheap one. They all work.
You can just go on Newegg, and for like $30-$40, you can get a DVD burner. Just make sure that it supports DVD DL, which is a dual-layer DVDs. That means you can burn like these super big DVDs that can hold a whole movie on them.
Yep, if it does DL, odds are 90% of the time, well, 99% of the time, it supports everything else you want to.
Yeah, plus, minus, RW, CDs, CDRW, you can put CDs, DVDs, whatever.
Just make sure it says DL, dual-layer.
Yep. Oh, and one note is that all DVD burners, technically, usually, start out region-free. And they will set themselves to a DVD region, you know, once you put a DVD in them or Windows does something. If you use Linux or if you do things properly or you have a piece of software, you can keep your DVD burner set to region zero to watch any movie you want. So if you like to watch foreign movies, pay attention to that before you make your DVD burner work.
Yeah. And in regards to other drives, I mean, external hard drives, yeah, if you use them, you use them. If you don't, you don't. That's not really something we care to talk about. Mm-hmm. But floppy drives.
You don't need them.
Don't bother.
You just don't need a floppy drive anymore. It's completely useless.
Floppy drives are really just completely useless. Drivers you get on the internet now, you save files to all. You have absolutely no reason to get a floppy drive.
If you really need something that does what a floppy drive does, which is read and write to something without wasting a bunch of CDs and move files around physically, get one of those little USB keys.
Yeah, I mean, you can get a 512 megabyte one for like $10.
$20. That's what I got mine. I got a 512 megabyte one for $20 on sale at Staples.
And the prices are dropping rapidly.
Yeah, they're dropping pretty quickly as flash gets cheaper. All right.
Now we're getting to two components, the last two main components. And these may seem like afterthoughts, but as particularly one of these is perhaps the most important decision you'll make.
One of the most difficult.
Yes, the most difficult. The case and the power supply.
Now, the case is that box that your computer goes in. I mean, you could, if you wanted to, just have your computer sit out on your desk on like a static-free mat, you know.
And we've had plug friends all, who did that.
Yeah, and plug all the pieces together and just have it wide open sitting there. But you really probably want to put the computer in a box to make it look like a computer.
And basically, you want to look online. You want a case that'll hold. First of all, you probably got an ATX motherboard.
If you didn't, what the hell?
You got a mini. You might have gotten a mini ATX.
A mini ATX are the ones that are designed for those tiny, tiny cases that are all cute and small.
So look at the motherboard you picked out, and then see if it says mini ATX or ATX. Mm-hmm. Make sure the case you buy says mini ATX or ATX. Otherwise, it won't fit.
Yep.
But if it says that, it'll fit guaranteed. That is an industry standard that no one deviates from except old broken Dells.
And if it doesn't fit, then you probably bought a really crap case.
Yeah. Now, basically, just look online, look at Newegg, look at the case. Make sure it looks nice, because the ones that look nice don't cost that much more than the cheap crap ones.
Yeah, I mean, you can get the really crazy riced out ones, which I don't think are so pretty, but they're, like, really cheap. It's weird.
Yeah.
But you have to look. When I look at a case, the first thing I look at is what material it's made out of. Plastic cases, usually really cheap and crappy, they're going to break. Steel cases are usually real heavy, real quality, usually, not all the time. But they might have sharp edges that'll cut you,
yeah.
And they're unpleasant to work with, and they're heavy.
I mean, I have a 3 foot tall, just a little over 3 feet, old school steel reinforced gray full tower case. It weighs like 60 pounds.
Yeah, not.
It's full of sharp bits. It's painful to maneuver in there. My cables are a mess.
Mm-hmm. And what I look at is I always want to buy an aluminum case because aluminum is light. Those cases usually cost a little more, but it's worth it. And you want to, if it's not like a crappo weird brand aluminum case, it probably won't cut you. It's well made. You know, it comes with all the right screws, quality parts. You know, aluminum is good. Get aluminum.
I mean, basically, just look on Newegg. It's pretty obvious what cases are crap and which ones are good just by looking at them.
Yeah, you can look at something and be like, hey, that looks like, you know, something from the weird crap gamer rice store. And you can look at something else and go, wow, that looks real slick. Look at that.
Your main choice is, do you want a mini tower, a mid tower, or a full tower?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, if you don't know, you want a mid tower.
Yep.
There's really no reason to get anything else. Mini tower, you probably won't have room for everything you need, unless space is a huge consideration for some reason.
Well, if you have, if you know that the only thing you're going to have in this computer is like one DVD-ROM and one hard drive and, you know, just the normal basic computer, then a mini tower is all you need. But if you ever think that you might add something to it, the mini tower might not hold it all. So a mid tower is probably a better choice if you're not sure about your future.
And don't bother with a full tower. I have one because I have a lot of hard drives in this computer because it's old and I do weird stuff. Unless you're building a file server or something, you don't need a full tower. You'll never fill it. It'll have all this empty space. You'll have long cables stretched to their limit. You'll never be able to move the thing around. It'll weigh a ton.
Mm-hmm. And anyone who talks about air circulation with the full tower being better or whatever, don't listen to whatever they're saying.
Though cooling is key. Make sure you buy a case that comes with fans.
Yes. It has to be a case that comes with fans, but I recommend you get a case with big fans. Big fans are better than little fans, or better than more little fans. Like,
yes.
You'll often see a case that has, like, in the back, like, two normal fan holes. You're better off getting one giant fan. Now, the giant fans are rare, but they spin slower, and they push more air per spin. So you end up getting is you get something quieter that keeps your computer just as cool, if not cooler.
And despite all the crazy things you see, you basically just need one intake fan in the front, mm-hmm. one exhaust fan in the back, and your power supply will have an exhaust fan inside of it.
Yeah, and your CPU will come with a fan if you buy a retail CPU.
Yep. Your video card will have a little tiny fan on it.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy a crazy, crazy fast computer, like, and you overclock it or something stupid, you might get the blowhole on the side.
Yep.
But that is not necessary in any situation that any of you will probably ever be in.
There might be a hole in the top. A hole in the top that exhaust is sometimes good, too.
Yeah, though not always, because then that might draw exhaust away from the power supply.
Yep.
And the other rule of thumb is that you want more exhaust. If you either want the fans to be equal, meaning you want the same amount of air being pushed in as is pulled out,
mm-hmm.
but if there's going to be a discrepancy, you always want more air being pulled out than being pushed in.
Yep, because basically all the parts of your computer make heat, and the air in your computer case gets hot. Now, if you just take the panel off the side of your computer and leave it wide open, you know, you don't have to worry about that because the air just comes right out.
Which is, in some cases, worse because you get less optimal airflow.
Yep. But if you have fans that work properly, the hot air will be pulled out of the computer pretty easily, and new cool air from your room, or cooler air from your room, will be pulled in. And that keeps your computer running nicely.
So just remember, always at least equal or more exhaust than intake.
Mm-hmm.
That is the primary rule of cooling, and it'll serve you well.
Yep.
If you want liquid cooling or something, buy a case that has it and get people to do it for you, because it's actually very difficult to do without ruining everything.
Yeah, it's not really worth the effort, in my opinion. Unless you're crazy.
We're going to do one final bit here, because I know that we've gone long, but the power supply.
Mm.
I know I've said I can't stress this enough too many times in the show. I cannot stress enough. Do not skimp on the power supply. A bad power supply can destroy your entire computer, and it won't be covered by warranty.
Yep. Well, here's the thing about a power supply. What it is there's the electricity from the wall, and there's a wire that goes from the wall to your computer. Right?
The power coming in is AC, and it's often dirty, or at least not perfect.
Yeah, anyway, that wire goes, not where does it go? It goes into your power supply, which is a little metal box. And then, on the other end, on the inside of your computer, coming out of this little metal box, are a bunch of crazy wires. And those wires go to your motherboard, they go to your CD-ROMs, they go to your hard drives, they go to your video cards sometimes. They go to each part of your computer to provide power to make things go. And that power supply box converts the power from the wall into the power your computer gets. And if you have a lot of things in your computer, you need a power supply that can provide a lot of power.
Now, the problem with this is that almost every power supply manufacturer in the world lies. They lie outright, and the wattage you see on a power supply is bullshit.
Pretty much almost all the time, the wattage on a power supply really doesn't mean so much.
Now, it would be fine if the industry was good and the wattage on the power supply meant how much power it can output,
mm-hmm.
because then you would just buy what you needed. And most computers don't need more than about 300 watts of actual power.
Yep. Or 350, really, yeah, these days.
But because they
more.
Lie, you need like a 500-watt power supply to cover your 400 watts of use.
Mm-hmm.
Or your 300 watts of use.
It's always good to have, even if they're not lying, because sometimes they're not, it's good to have a power supply that can put out more power than you're using, because then if you decide you want to add 3 hard drives, you won't have to buy a new power supply.
Not only that, but the failure mode of a power supply, the way it happens, is basically the closer you are to the peak output of the power supply, the more it wears out, the more likely it is to fail, and the dirtier power it's going to send to your motherboard.
Mm-hmm.
And the more a power supply fails, the more it's going to send spurious voltages to the motherboard, which will cause your computer to crash, reboot randomly, it'll destroy RAM sticks, it might destroy a hard drive.
Yep. There is one saving grace, and that is if you try to take more power out of a power supply.
A modern power supply.
A modern power supply, meaning the past 10 years or so. Yeah. Then if you try to take more out of it than it can put out. Let's say I plug in 10 hard drives into an old 300-watt power supply. It just won't turn on. It won't work. And it's really hard to figure this out because it never tells you what's going on because it doesn't really have that ability.
Yeah, you basically have to sit there with a voltimeter to find out.
Yeah, but
if you check
over the inside of your computer and everything looks just fine, and if you push the power button and nothing happens, it's probably the power supply is either dead or it's refusing to turn on. And what you should try to do is unplug as many things as you can and just run the bare minimum parts of your PC and see if it turns on.
Or if you work with a lot of computers, I recommend buying a power supply tester. You can buy them at like Circuit City or Antec. They're like $10. They're just a thing. You plug into that wire coming out of the power supply and you unplug everything else and you turn it on. And it applies a load between 2 pins. Well, you don't care. Basically, if the light turns on, the power supply works. If the light doesn't turn on, your power supply is dead.
Yep, I really didn't care about the power supply. It wasn't an important part of the computer for me. I just took whatever came with the case. Because you can get cases that include power supplies, and usually that might be a good idea, you know. But anyway, I had one that came with the case, and I didn't even think about it. It worked. And then one day, I pushed the power button, and my computer wouldn't turn on. And it took me forever to realize, oh, the power supply is just bad. It died. And that was not something I thought about, but now I think about it a lot. And I bought this crazy power supply in my current computer. It's like blue and shiny and has fans and it's like 400 something watts.
Yep. Now having way too many things that your power supply can't power is fine because it won't start. Mm-hmm. The most dangerous situation you can be in is if you have just enough power.
Because
then every time the power supply burps, it's sending bad voltage to your motherboard, which stresses the capacitors and the power regulation circuits on the motherboard. And it's going to ruin your computer.
Yep.
Like, really, we're not kidding.
Mm-hmm. So you want to have more power supply than you need, and you don't want to buy something cheap and crappy.
So buy a name brand that comes in a nice box. We're not going to name brands because actually good brands come and go and the market's pretty volatile.
Mm-hmm. You can always kind of trust actually the ones that you get in a box at like CompUSA.
Yep.
Those are usually pretty reliable.
Even like the crap CompUSA brand ones are pretty good.
Yep. And usually what you can tell is if you try to turn another thing you can tell is I remember I had a computer where I thought that all you needed was a 300 watt because I still didn't realize what was going on. And you know, I would push the button on the computer, and it would just be like, deet, deet. But it wasn't a RAM error. It was just some other beep error that I didn't know anything about. That was because they didn't have enough power supply to turn the computer on. And the motherboard was like, hey, I'm getting power, but not enough.
Now, there are crazy things you can do. You can get multiple power supplies, modular power supplies, redundant power supplies. But that's very difficult to do in consumer PCs, so we really can't talk about it.
You don't really need that anyway. Just get one good power supply.
Yes. And if you work, like if you're one of those people who has a million computers around the house and you're always fiddling with old computers, have an extra power supply around.
Extra power supplies are very good to have.
Yes, because if your computer dies and you're panicking, it's very nice to plug in a different power supply and see your computer boot. Because then you know, it's just my power supply, my computer's okay, thank the gods.
Yeah, that's one good thing about the power supply, is if the power supply dies, your data is still safe.
Most likely. I mean, worst case scenario, if a power supply dies, it usually destroys itself physically so that it can't hurt your computer.
Yep.
But cheap power supplies, or if they fail spectacularly, will probably destroy your motherboard or processor. Usually they destroy RAM before they destroy anything else.
Or CPUs sometimes.
Yeah. CPU is actually the last thing to go. Because I deal with this a lot at work. It'll destroy the RAM and the power regulation things on the motherboard before it does anything else.
Mm.
If it destroys the CPU, you were fucked anyway.
Yeah.
But even if it destroys a hard drive, the data's probably still there, and it's really rare for a power supply to actually hurt a hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
But still, don't skimp. Don't skimp, don't skimp.
Yep. If you're not sure how much wattage you need, go look online and see what other people with similarly powerful computers are getting. And if you can't find that out, just call the people who make your motherboard on the phone and be like, hey, what kind of, or call whoever you're buying the parts from and say, hey, what kind of, you know, how much power supply do I need for all this stuff? And someone will probably be able to make you a good recommendation. Because seriously, like the 600 watt power supplies, the crazy ones, you really only need those if you're like the crazy gamer with the two video cards and the five hard drives and the two burners and whatnot.
Yep. And if you really want to get crazy and build a computer with a ton of hard drives or something weird, you can just have two power supplies, and there are ways to do that. I'm not going to explain how to do it now because you have to do some wiring, but you can do things like that if you really want.
Yeah, the trick is to find a case and a motherboard that support that, and usually those are like the server motherboards that take two processors and all that, but
yeah,
that's not a desktop computer. Who cares?
So, those are basically all the main components, and we've gone long, so we're just going to stop here.
Yeah. Oh, just one last sentence. You need a keyboard and a mouse. Get a keyboard you like, a USB keyboard, wireless if you really want to.
Probably QWERTY, because we're going to do a whole show on this, but don't bother with Dvorak.
Well, you know, unless you're already a Dvorak guy.
Yeah, but there are issues.
Yeah.
I am very sour on
all right,
Dvorak.
I thought I was only say one sentence. And then buy a mouse that feels comfortable on your hand and is also USB wireless if you want to.
Yep.
And make sure it has all the buttons you like to use.
And then plug everything in and turn your computer on.
And it'll work if you do it right.
Yeah, we really got to work on these ending the podcast gracefully.
Well, bits. That would be a graceful ending, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would.
But too late, I ruined it.
Ha ha! And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for the opening music.
Thanks for listening. Please remember to point your favorite podcatcher at feeds.feedburner.com/geeknights to get the latest episodes as soon as they're released. Also, please visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com for the latest updates and forum discussion. And whether you love or hate our podcast, we won't know unless you send your feedback to us at geeknights@gmail.com.